Every Rosh Hashanah, we get a flurry of letters at First Fruits of Zion to scold us for honoring this pagan, unbiblical New Year's festival. People point out that Exodus chapter 12 says that the first month comes in the spring, so that's the only biblical New Year. I will once again defer to my colleague Aaron Eby and quote from an excellent article he has written on the topic to address this question. Eby writes, "Throughout history, each civilization had their own significant events that they used as a frame of reference to mark the passing of time. The most common event was the inauguration of kings. This is how the Bible usually marks dates. During the exile, there is no king, so the prophet Ezekiel marks time by the exile itself. This should point out to us that the mere question, what year is it, does not make sense without a specific context. A better question would be, how many years has it been since such and such occurred? Likewise, asking, when is the new year, is like asking, when is the anniversary? The anniversary of what? So the number of the year and the exact date that it switches on depend on what information a person is seeking." Eby then proceeds to speak about the agricultural cycle. In ancient civilizations, Israel being no exception, one of the most dominant yearly cycles was the agricultural year. The Gezer calendar, for example, is a Paleo-Hebrew inscription from the 10th century BCE. Even though it dates to centuries before the Babylonian exile, it describes each month of the agricultural year beginning with the fall and ending in the summer. For the ancient Israelites, the agricultural cycle was unavoidable. One plants in the winter and harvests that planting through the summer. This cycle is a fact of nature, determined by the God-ordained seasons and climate. In regards to the agricultural cycle, the Bible instructs that every 7 years there is to be a sabbatical year in which the land receives its rest. As you can see, this 7-year cycle is entirely based on the agricultural year. To take 1 year off from planting and harvesting, one would have no choice but to begin in the fall, when the previous year's harvest is completed. Thus, each of those 7 years must be counted from harvest to harvest, not from spring to spring. As we read further, we find that this 7-year agricultural cycle is part of a larger 50-year cycle culminating in the Yovel Jubilee year. "You shall count 7 weeks of years, 7 times 7 years, so that the time of the 7 weeks of years shall give you 49 years. Then you shall sound the loud trumpet on the 10th day of the 7th month. On the Day of Atonement, you shall sound the trumpet throughout all your land." Leviticus 25:8-9. Notice how this cycle of 49 years ends in the 7th month. But why would the Torah insist on referring to the time of the harvest as the 7th month if it is legitimately the beginning of the year? Eby continues by highlighting the Torah's language of the year's end. We find similar language when we read about the 3 pilgrimage festivals, particularly when they are described in view of the agricultural year. "You shall keep the feast of unleavened bread. 7 days you are to eat unleavened bread as I commanded you, at the time appointed in the month Abib. For in the month Abib you came out from Egypt. You shall observe the Feast of Weeks, the first fruits of wheat harvest, the Feast of Ingathering at the year's end." Exodus 34:18-22. What is spoken of here as the Feast of Ingathering is known elsewhere as the Feast of Tabernacles, which is observed in the 7th month. Similar language for Sukkot is used in Leviticus. "On the 15th day of the 7th month, when you have gathered in the produce of your land, you shall celebrate the Feast of the Lord 7 days. On the first day shall be a solemn rest, and on the 8th day shall be a solemn rest." Leviticus 23:39. This passage begs 2 questions. Why is a holiday in the 7th month called the end of the year? Also, why is the holiday of Sukkot called by the unusual name, the Feast of Ingathering, in this passage? Eby then brings this all together by stating that each festival serves a dual purpose. All of the biblical holidays are multifaceted. Not only do they each commemorate events of redemption that the nation experienced, but they also coincide with the agricultural cycle. There are other things we can notice that is unusual about the wording of this passage. This explains why the Torah would refer to the holiday of Sukkot with the unusual term, the Feast of Ingathering. Although a sukkah, tabernacle, is in fact a harvest hut, a makeshift shelter from the sun used during the harvest season, the Torah also connects the sukkah to the Exodus from Egypt, Leviticus 23:42-43. By referring to this holiday as ingathering, the Torah emphasizes its relationship with the agricultural year. This also explains why a holiday in the seventh month would be called at the end of the year. It is the end of the agricultural year. The Hebrew word translated end by the ESV is tekufa, which has the sense of cycling or turning, making a complete circuit. It is not only an end, but a new beginning. Finally, E.B. concludes, we can now return to our question about why the Torah would call the beginning of the agricultural year the seventh month. The agricultural cycle of planting and harvesting, which completes its cycle in the fall, is not pagan or Babylonian. It is of divine origin and perceptible through nature in every culture. In the instruction to number the months in Exodus 12, the agricultural cycle is not in view. Rather, it is the redemption from Egypt. By numbering the months beginning with the month of the Exodus, we remember that this is the beginning. Everything hinges on that miraculous event. E.B. has provided us with a clear analysis as to why having a new year in the fall is not man-made, nor, God forbid, pagan, but rather a biblical practice. It is so important that when examining a practice of Judaism, before deeming it unbiblical or pagan, we examine the reasons behind it, and in particular, its roots in the text of the Torah.